Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 128. I'm Dave Bryant from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd once again is Alex Cazora on this Friday. Alex, happy Friday. 1 week from today, you will be on your way to St. Vincent College in La Trobe for the Steelers' first training camp practice of 2017.
Either driving there or pushing the McLumina. Either way, I'll be at La Trobe, so excited for it.
Well, there's no excuses now because you have a smartphone and everything, so if the McLumina does go down, you're just going to have to get an Uber ride.
That's a good point. Yeah, La Trobe's already got a lot of construction. The McLumina, it's just already a mess.
Yeah, that's tax deductible and all. Anytime you get an Uber ride or whatnot, so just save your receipts and all.
The McLumina exemption.
There you go. Let's see here. One week to go until the start of training camp. Obviously, the big news closing out, or really on Monday to close out the early portion of the week, and we've written about it quite a bit, and obviously talked a bit about it quite a bit on late on Monday, was the fact that Le'Veon Bell did not get a new deal signed with the Steelers prior to the league's 4 o'clock deadline. A lot of people thought, maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't happen. Good reasons on both sides. It did not happen. And, since then, some numbers have come out. And, I think we talked a little bit beforehand about, the Redskins, releasing, some of the figures of the final offer they had had on the table for Kirk Cousins. I'm a bit surprised that these numbers came out, and that is if we are to believe these numbers, which I don't think there's any reason not to believe them, especially considering the source, Tom Passerio, formerly of USA Today, I think with NFL Network now. But if you believe his numbers, and those numbers were a deal that averaged over $12 million, which, makes sense, over the amount, probably slightly higher than the amount of the $12.12 million franchise tag. We don't know any other guarantees involved, but we, according to that report, Bell stood to earn $30 million through the first 2 years of the deal, $42 million through the first 3 years of the deal, and that, of course, would have averaged $14 million over the course of the first three. Once again, we don't know the guaranteed money involved, but, if you go back and look at contracts not for players not named Ben Roethlisberger, generally the only guaranteed money is signing bonus when it comes to players. And when you look back just not long ago at the contract that Antonio Brown signed, he only received, I don't want to say only, that's a poor choice of words, he received $19 million signing bonus. One would think that Le'Veon Bell was not offered that kind of money. Any 15, 16, maybe $17 million signing bonus. But pretty much as I stated all along, Alex, I kind of expected if a deal was to get signed, Bell would have earned roughly $18 to $20 million in year one, being 2017, even though not all of that would have been guaranteed. He would have had to done something very, very stupid not to get that. And really, for all practical purposes, virtually guaranteed is a very dangerous phrase, but when's the last time we've seen, not seen a player? Obviously you can point to Ladarius Green, but talking about a guy that has been brought up through the Steelers system that signed a long-term deal, You know, when is the last time that we haven't seen one of those players not make it at least through the first 2 years of their deal? And I guess in essence what I'm saying is, you know, Le'Veon Bell was going to see at least the first 2 years of that deal, and even further than that, you know, probably the first 3 years of it, you know, as well. So first, what are your thoughts on these numbers? You know, I think it's obvious if the numbers were leaked, it came from the Steelers' side of things. And mm-hmm. and second, what do you think about the deal that Le'Veon Bell turned down?
You know, I never want to say what is right for a player to take because I'm not in their head. I don't know what their thought process is because, like you said, these things lean towards the team because, you know, they're going to leak the numbers and they're going to make the player, you know, look greedy for it. So if Bell wants to bet on himself and thinks he can get maybe the $15 million that he really wants per year, more power to him. But what I say is this, is two things. One, I think the Steelers made based on what we know, a fair and competitive offer for not competing against anybody else right now. And you listen to other guys like you and other cap guys, Joel Corey and the like, and they say it was, in their estimation, a fair offer. And frankly, some of them said they were surprised Bell did not take it. My second thought is, if these numbers are true, this offer is probably as good as it's going to get from Pittsburgh. I can't see anything changing this season that's going to make them bump up their offer. And that concerns me because, you know, we talked on Monday, Dave, right after the deadline where the deal did not get done. And I said, well, you know, I'm still optimistic about a long-term deal getting done because there's good faith between each side. They worked hard today. They'll have a better starting point after the season. But now when you see these numbers and you see Bell's comments about basically just resetting the entire running back market and wanting to get paid like a number one runner and a number two receiver, I don't think he's going to get that from Pittsburgh. And so I think, you know, to look ahead briefly, the Steelers' only option next year is the tag. I don't know a way a long-term deal is going to get done.
Yeah, you know, and I believe that was kind of my sentiments as well the other day because of, talking about the quality of the deal and if indeed, you know, these numbers are being reported are what ended up. Before we move on, though, and me add on to what you said, I mean, what do you think about the Steelers, you know, leaking the deal, if indeed that happened?
Well, like you said, you can almost guarantee this is coming from the team, and I have a pretty good idea of the particular person it's coming from, but I probably shouldn't say. That's how it goes. You know, teams like to, you know, put that kind of pressure out there and, you know, because fans see those numbers, and understandably so. Someone sees a guy with the opportunity to make $40 million in 3 years, and you go, how do you pass that up? So, you know, it's not as brazen and as aggressive and frankly as stupid as Washington did, but in some respects, the principle's similar.
Yeah, but what is there to gain by the Steelers doing that, you know? Do they really want the fan base? Either he takes it or not. Do they really want the fan base, you know, on their side and pushing against a player, or is that a negotiation tactic to wear them down over the course of the next year? Because I mean, let's face it, it's not like anything can be done now between now and what we hope is into the, you know, third week mm-hmm. of February, you know, if they make a push to the Super Bowl and all like that. I mean, you know, how is releasing those numbers going to change anything? You know, maybe if you had opportunity to continue negotiating with them the rest of the rest of the off season, you know, maybe I could see that, but I just don't see what you stand to gain. I mean, I said before this thing happened, you know, I love numbers and I pull for all deals to get done so I can look at the numbers. And while I am glad that we got some numbers or what we think are the right numbers, it's still not all the numbers.
Right. Yeah. You're still probably leaving out some of the potential guaranteed, or at least, you know, we don't know concretely what the guaranteed money was. I just think, you know, if you can't get a deal done, if two sides can't come together, then your side wants to look like the guy that didn't prevent the deal from getting done. It was the other side's fault. And I think that would be maybe the biggest incentive for these numbers to come out.
You know, and as far as talking about now, going back, adding on what you said just previously, the fact that this was a very Steelers-like deal. If you go way back to the, you know, several of the conversations I think you and I had, myself and David Todd, and even with Joel Corey, remember me asking Joel Corey when I had him on, Joel, you know, I said, you know, when you franchise tag a player, even a running back, and you know, and that tag amounts $12.12 million, you just told the player that's what he's worth a year. So why wouldn't negotiations, or at least final negotiations, end up at that, at, you know, at, you know, the, at least the franchise tag amount being the average yearly value. And that's exactly what happened. Now, granted, the running back market has definitely, the bottom has dropped out of that over the course of the offseason. But, I mean, you told the player that's what he's worth, and that's what the player is going to expect on a multi-year deal. Have we learned anything at all? Do we need to not ever forget this again going forward with the Steelers organization and deals coming off of players with franchise tags? And yes, the only way they're going to keep Le'Veon Bell from reaching free agency next year is to place a $14.54 million franchise tag on him. There's no way that's not going to happen. So when that does happen, you know, that is going to be the starting point, in my opinion, and am I wrong to think that?
No, you were preaching it, you know, this whole time about this current tag, Dave, about this is where the average yearly value has to at least start at around $12 million, and that's exactly what happened. The Steelers were a little over $12 million per year, and apparently their final and best offer. The Steelers are very principled and in a very old-school fashion in the way that they do contracts, as I'm sure you're aware of, Dave. And so, yeah, that is important to keep in mind, that they have their own structure that they're going to adhere to. It's not going to have a ton of guaranteed money outside the signing bonus. There might be a little roster bonus in there, you know, but, you know, they know their structure, and it's not going to change for basically any non-quarterback. So that's important to keep in mind. We'll probably forget about it when the next deal comes along. That's just how things go, and we'll remind ourselves then. But it's going to be interesting with the tag next year, because you're right. If you put the tag on him again, then you say his value is, you know, what the tag is worth, but I just don't think a long-term deal is going to work out.
Yeah, in essence, next year, he is going to at least want a deal. Now, this all assumes, you know, he has, you know, let's say, you know, 300 touches, at least, you know, 2,000 total yards from scrimmage. He stays healthy, out of trouble with the league, yada, yada, everything that goes along with that. If the tag amount is 14.54, which I believe that's what it's going to be, you know, the best offer is going to be slightly higher than that. Then we're talking about that $15 million that he rapped about over a year ago from right now, talking being the number. That's a lot of money, man. I know the tag goes. I know the salary cap goes up every year. When you talk about the guaranteed money, then at that point, you're probably talking about, you know, a signing bonus of getting even closer to what Antonio Brown got, you know, from the Steelers this past offseason. There's no reason to think that a long-term deal ever gets done with Le'Veon Bell unless something happens with him moving in the wrong direction in 2017. And then at that point, you have to weigh what moved in the wrong direction, and is it worth paying a back even $12 million a year at that point?
It is a mess, Dave. And the other problem is, you know, we know that Bell may not be there for day one of camp. He might pull an Eric Berry. And if Bell continues the Berry path, what happened with him was that he got tagged, played on it, 2 years ago, then got tagged again this past winter and said, I'm never playing on the tag. I'm going to hold out forever unless you guys give me a long-term deal. And so eventually Kansas City and Barry came to a long-term deal. Well, you know, in this case, we both agree that the chances don't look good for that ever happening with Le'Veon Bell. So what happens? You tag him again, and Bell, clearly frustrated, does no one likes to play under the tag, you know, goes at Eric Berry route and says, I'm not playing under the tag. And then you have this giant mess of a situation that I can't even begin to wrap my head around how you resolve it.
Did you read my Twitter future headline the other day?
I did not. I can probably take a good guess at it. I did not read it.
Yeah, I mean, and it was right along the line of what you just said there. I posted with a question mark after it. February 2018 future headline. I forget the exact wording. I think after 2,000 total yard season, Le'Veon Bell announces he won't play under the tag in 2018.
Huh. Yeah, he actually said that back in April. Someone dug up a tweet saying that I'll never play under the tag, and so we'll see.
Well, I mean, but I'm talking about next year now, obviously. But I mean, he's going to play under the tag this year. We just don't know at what point he's going to report. I mean, obviously, I think everybody agrees he'll be there week one. But of course, now there's even more uncertainty about training camp and everything that goes along with that. So, do you expect him to take the Eric Berry route next year?
It's certainly possible. Like, it's hard for me to really say what to expect, especially that far out. But, you know, my point about him being mad about the tag this year, you know, obviously he's playing under it in 2017, but clearly he'd be even more unhappy to get it again. And he wants his long-term deal, and he wants his money, and he wants his security, all things that are understandable. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I just know it's going to be a mess because you're going to have the competing nature of the Steelers with their best offer versus the tag amount versus Bell not wanting the tag. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions from there.
Do you understand why he didn't sign the deal? And why did you agree in my post on why he is gambling the way he is?
Sure. I get it. I mean, I'm bummed by it, like I said, from a selfish fan standpoint. I want a long-term deal to get done. I want to keep Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh for as long as possible. But, you know, if players bet on themselves and Bell's the best at his position, and so I get wanting to take that gamble because the payoff is huge. And honestly, Dave, I think if he ever hit the open market, he would get $15 million a year from somebody. When you have 10-plus teams driving up his value and someone with a cap space to burn, if Pittsburgh's willing to come semi-close to that number without competing against anybody in their generally more conservative nature, I can almost guarantee on the open market someone's going to throw, you know, those kind of extra, you know, bags of money at him.
Will he wind up, stare into your crystal ball, and over the course of this year, next year, and 2019, will his gamble pay off? Will he have earned more than $42 million?
Oh, man, Magic 8-Ball says ask again later. I don't know. I anticipate him getting tagged in 2018, which puts him under what he would have gotten under the $30 million of this 2 year, or the first 2 years of the offer the Steelers gave.
Right, so that puts him about a little more than $3 million short than what he would have had. So let's put him at 20. Or let's go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt and give him 27 million after the first 2 years, which obviously it'll be a little bit less than that with back to back tags. Mm-hmm. So that means for him to get to $42 million. Or more, actually more, he would need, over $15 million from a team not named the Steelers in 2019, because let's face it, they're not going to back-to-back-to-back tag him, because that amounts to quarter, you know, it had to be the quarterback franchise tag amount at that point. So if he played on back-to-back tags, he would end up with another team in 2019 and thus would have to pocket more than $15 million in year one of that deal in order for it to pay off. So do you think that will happen?
Yeah, I think he will. Like I said, if he plays the way he does, and obviously we're talking 2019, so we're talking really far out, but if he plays the way he does and he ever hits the open market, it's going to be a frenzy out there, and someone, you know, is going to have $50 million in cap going into free agency. We've seen teams have more and more cap space lately, and someone's going to drive the money truck up to his front door.
Yeah, I think there's a chance if he stays healthy and has the kind of two seasons that we think he can have, I think there could be a $20 million 2019 in store for him. So that puts him at 47, let's say between 47 and 48 or 47 and 49 million through the first 3 years, as opposed to 42 million from the Steelers over 3 years, is I mean, we're talking millions of dollars. We're talking about something we have no idea how to relate to it. But is risking $7 million worth it?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to empathize and think about being in that situation, because it's such an ungodly amount of money that I can't wrap my mind around. Like I said, I'm all for players gambling on it and betting on themselves. I get it. You know, you want to try to get the most money that you can and what you feel that you're worth, because the window of opportunity is so small in the NFL, and especially for running backs. It's hard for me to say whether or not it's worth it or not. It doesn't really matter much what I think, but I understand what Bell's doing.
Would you, knowing what you know, and you know that's dangerous right now, because we still don't know the guarantee. We think we know the guarantee, but we don't know the guarantee. Mm-hmm. Knowing what we think we know, obviously you would have signed the deal, right?
I mean, me personally, yes, I clearly would have done it, but that's also part of the reason why those numbers get leaked. So all the fan base goes, man, you should have taken that deal. How do you pass it up? It's to create that public perception that Bell made a mistake, and even more nefariously, that Bell is greedy and selfish and doesn't care about the team.
I mean, he's running the risk here too. Even though the risk, a serious knee injury is a serious knee injury, but the more likelihood, as I said when we opened this thing, that he was going to at the very least see the first 2 years of this deal, meaning $30 million, regardless of what happened to him. Now, if he, while he's training down in Miami, he tears that knee up, or if he for the second, the third game of the season, or whatever, you know, suffers a knee injury, misses, you know, 5-6 games with another injury, you know, he might be kissing, you know, that franchise tag goodbye next year, and yeah, there might be another team willing to take a chance on him if he's allowed to hit free agency. But you know, you have to wonder, you know, how much he'd leave it on the table, you know, in the meantime there. Another thing to think about is down the future. Look, this team was able to absorb that $12.12 million salary cap charge this year. It gets tougher at $14.54 million next offseason. Now, you can always restructure guys. You can always make the numbers work and massage the cap. But, man, it gets tougher. You know, it really does. It's hard not seeing 2018 right now at the best being Le'Veon Bell's last season in Pittsburgh.
Right. I'm way down on my optimism level, clearly, from where I was Monday, just seeing these numbers, and maybe just as importantly, maybe more importantly, seeing Bell's comments about just wanting to burn down the running back market and be this trendsetter for everyone else to follow. And I don't think Pittsburgh's going to play that game. I think the offer that they've given, as reported, is as good as it's going to get. Bell having another strong year is not going to change that really at all. Steelers understand the risks. Bell said that injury and suspension did not come up as a negotiating tactic against in the meeting between him and his agent. So I think this is as good as offer as it gets, and a long-term deal, unless something dramatically changes, as we've pointed out, I think it's going to be really tough to do.
And look, he is the best, or one of the best. I mean, David Johnson, a very similar back, Shady McCoy and all like that. But, I mean, it's not like – yeah, I mean – it's not, you don't get an asterisk or a slash position or whatnot. You know, we remember Jimmy Graham a few years ago saying that he should get the wide receiver tag because of how much he lines up in the flex. Look, you better go to your team and you know, if you're Le'Veon Bell and insist you get lined up as a wide receiver 2/3 of the time if you want to get paid wide receiver money. It just doesn't, you just can't say, well, I want number one running back money and number two running back money, which Bell apparently recently said, you know, told Ike Taylor here the last few days ago, or something. You know, I forget the exact time frame there, but you know, the running back market is what it is, and if these players don't like the guarantees, I know Richard Sherman from the Seahawks has come out and applauded Bell for turning down his deal. Called it, said the Steelers didn't like the fact that the Steelers were trying to bully Bell into a long term deal. Have you seen the deal that Richard Sherman signed a few years ago? You know, maybe you should practice what he preaches there, but. I thought it was a fair deal from the Steelers, and Bell didn't sign it, and that might be the last best deal that he gets, you know, between now and then. And now you just got to hope. You know, look, he might have ended up doing the Steelers a favor here. You know, you get maybe the next 2 years, if that happens, if very prime years out of them. The running back obviously has every incentive to stay healthy and out of trouble right now with the league and really give you 2,000 plus yards from scrimmage over the next 2 years. And if he does that, he'll be worth $26 million over the course of the next 2 years. And then you can just dump him on the pile. And then, oh, yeah, you're going to get a third round compensatory pick for him when he leaves on top of it there. So definitely interesting to watch moving forward. And obviously the next few weeks, you know, unfortunately, we're probably going to be talking about when will Le'Veon Bell get into training camp.
Yeah, and again, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but I think it should be there day one, because you know he's not going to get worked hard anyway, and everyone talks about the injury risk and the rigors of camp. Bell's still going to be training in Miami or wherever he's going to train at, and he's not going to be doing that under a tag, so you talk about injury risk. I mean, he goes out there, trains without a tag, and he twists his knee, tears his ACL, has some sort of major injury. Now you're up a creek without a paddle. You know, you don't have a franchise tag. The team can make a decision there potentially. I mean, you put yourself in a really bad spot. So he's probably not going to be there day one, but I think it's the smartest play.
You think he'll show up at all? Do you think Alex Cazorra will see Le'Veon Bell at St. Vincent College in 2017?
Oh, man. I'd have to see when the third game was and where that starts with camp. I think he shows up sometime during that, before leading up to the third preseason game. I don't know where that lines up with Latrobe's schedule.
Well, they usually break. Don't they usually break before the?
I think
before
it's
the second game.
Before the second? I think maybe you're right. I never can keep track. If it's before the second game, then no, I don't think he'll be there for Latrobe. But I don't think he wants to sleep in dorm rooms, you know.
Well, if memory serves me, let's see here. August 20th is their second preseason game. So camp.
Yeah, they've broken by then.
Camp breaks, I think, that you know, Thursday or Friday or whatever.
Okay.
Before that. So, yeah, unfortunately, you know. Man, I would have bet you, you know, a lot of money 2 months ago that, you know, we wouldn't have been talking about this. But I unfortunately, even though we talked time and time again how there really doesn't appear on our end to be anything to gain for Le'Veon Bell right now, I'm afraid that if you see him at all, it'll probably only be for one or two practices. And now I do think we'll see him, you know, before the end of the preseason, in one or two of these games get bounced around. But you know, just hopefully he can train on his own and responsible and not get in trouble or get injured along the way. All right, anything else? Anything else left to beat on this Bell cow?
No, I was going to move to beating the dead horse on the Villanueva front, because I don't think we've talked about that too much, Dave. Any thoughts there on Villanueva?
I don't see how he doesn't report. You know,
you think he'll be there day one?
I think he'll be there. I think he'll sign his tender in good faith, and then go from there. I mean, obviously he's not going to show up and practice without, you know, the tender signed, because I think it'd be absolutely silly on his part to practice on a signed waiver. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you can get away with that during OTAs and mandatory minicamp, but once the pads get on, you probably want something to have been signed, you know, at that point. So, I mean, you only 615,000 exclusive rights. I think there's a good chance that the moment that he gets in camp and he signs that tender, I think they're able to get a deal worked out with him fairly quick, to be honest with you.
Right, and I'm hoping that happens before the start of camp, too. I still have, you know, hope for that. We've seen those deals get done.
Yeah, but I still think they make him sign for as a matter of principle.
Oh, really? You think they make him sign it?
I think they make him sign that tender. That way, you just you can point to it and say, look, future players, we don't negotiate until you sign, you know, and sign that piece of paper. And I would expect them to make him sign that tender before he gets a new deal. So,
yeah, makes sense.
You know, I'm going to look in the past with these guys, you know, Mike Wallace and the restricted tender. You know, it makes sense for players to have to sign that piece of paper in good faith before they get, you know, the next level there. And I mean, is there a chance Villanueva goes into a regular season without a long-term deal? Man, I think that would, you know, look, he's not going to get $12, $13 million a year. And we've went over this time and time again, the max that he can earn right now over the course of the next 2 years. You know, if I think you can make him happy with a deal at $6 or $7 million a year over the next, you know, let's say 3 years or something along those lines, which will allow him one last opportunity to cash in. I think that's fair and for both sides. And I just don't see right now how they don't get something like that done.
I agree. And the last thing I'll say to that is I think the move that does not make sense is holding out, because I don't know, but his agent's going to tell him to. Villanueva said he's going to do whatever his agent recommends. But holding out in other cities might work, but in Pittsburgh, it's just going to delay the process, make it that much tougher to get a long-term deal done. I made the comparison to Hines Ward, where Hines deserved more money. He held out for 2 weeks. Team didn't budge. He comes back. 2 weeks later, they get a mega deal done for him. I mean, the steal is very clear about how they do their business.
Yeah, and I don't get all these people saying, oh, he shouldn't do that because he'll lose his job to either Chris Hubbard or Gerald Hawkins. Are you kidding me?
Nah, not gonna happen.
Give me a break here. There is no way Gerald Hawkins or Chris Hubbard is going to steal Villanueva's job. I don't care if Villanueva held out 2 weeks into the regular season. That's not going to happen. Look, we all are still we're still bullish, if you will, on Gerald Hawkins, but there is absolutely no evidence right there that he can immediately move in to the lineup and be a effective left tackle right away. There's just none whatsoever. Mm-hmm. If anything, you should have your fingers crossed that this is the guy that could be your swing tackle this year and thus make Chris Hubbard potentially expendable. I mean, but you know, there's a good shot that you're holding on to both Hubbard and Hawkins and Villanueva this year as well, too. So don't hand me the, oh, he better get in camp because his position might be given away nonsense. I'm not buying that.
Right. This is not a Babe Ruth, Wally Pipp situation here. Chris Hubbard is not the Babe. Neither is Hawkins.
Make no mistake, too. Neither one of us are saying that Villanueva is Joe Thomas here.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the only thing I will say is that, you know, I went through Villanueva's comments right after the offseason, right after the season ended, and, you know, he was talking about how tough it was to not be the first team left tackle at parts of camp last year, where he got rotated with Ryan Harris. Now, obviously, he's the clear-cut starter this season, but I'm sure he wouldn't like, you know, seeing those guys, knowing those guys are taking his reps and not being the first team left tackle after with the rest of his guys. So I'm just hoping that a deal would get done before camp, though I think you make a good point that a team probably would expect him to sign his tender before they move on to a negotiation. But B is that he shows up for camp day one and within 2 weeks they get a long-term deal hammered out.
You know, the last thing I'll add about that guy, and I wrote about that this past week, it goes against every moral fiber in his body to hold right. out. So if he does hold out, you got to know that it's just killing him. You
right.
know,
absolutely.
You know, former Army captain, be around the guys type guy. You sign the agreement. You're supposed to honor it. You know, even though he hasn't signed that tender yet. You know, it would just be eating him alive. So that's just another reason why, you know, I will be surprised if he doesn't show up for the start of training camp. Look, we've already covered some of these other things. You know, the main issues there, Bell, Villanueva. Those are the only two players I think at best have a chance of not showing up for training camp at time, on time. We can speculate till the cows come home about which players will start training camp on the active PUP list. We miss it every year because we don't know exactly, you know, who is fully healthy. I think there's a chance guys like Tuitt. I think even if Bell shows up, I think there's a chance he shows up on the active PUP list as well. A few other guys that had some off-season work done could show up on there. We don't expect that list to be long, but there's going to be a few names on it. I think regardless of the situation, of what we think that we you know, that we think we know come this time of year. We talked about the potential, Ben Roethlisberger having to answer questions about Martavis Bryant, about Le'Veon Bell. I'm sure he'll get that out of the way. I think a lot of players are going to be asked about Bell, and unfortunately, we'll have to write about that a week ago today. It's just going to be part of the process here. Anything else, main storyline that you know we should look forward to as far as a week from today goes?
No, I think that's everything. You know, it's unfortunate that all this off the field stuff is already kicking in before the season starts, and it's going to create these storylines when I know you, I, and I'm sure all the listeners right now want to talk about football and how this team can get on track to go win a Super Bowl. So, but you know, that's the way it goes.
All right, position groups. Let's roll through. You know, we've already previewed quite a few. Let's roll through some real quickly here on the offensive side of the ball. Offensive line. Really, I mean, you can pencil this thing in right now, right? We know the five starters with Villanueva being one of them. You know, obviously, Gerald Hawkins is going to be part of this. B.J. Finney is going to be part of this. You know, where does it go from there? We already named seven guys. We think eight, possibly nine total. You know, Hubbard. You know, who else?
I mean, the only guy that I guess has a chance to play his way onto the roster is, you know, maybe a Brian Mahalik. But I think, you know, there's not much to talk about this group in terms of the 53. It's basically been set since the season ended, you know, just bring the guys back, essentially. And, you know, just about where some of these guys fit. You know, Hawkins will essentially replace Ryan Harris. And, you know, maybe he's a swing guy. Or maybe he's just the left tackle and Hubbard is the right. You know, there's a little bit of nuance to talk about. But, you know, in terms of the construction of the roster and who's making the team, I mean, it's pretty much set. And then you have, I think, some good depth with Mahalik, with a guy like Ethan Cooper as an intriguing UDFA, and, you know, Matt Filer, who stuck around last year as well.
And even though Mahalik spent some time on on the 53-man roster, the Detroit Lions last year, you know, once you get through camp and all like that to open up the regular season, assuming Mahalik doesn't look like a young Villanueva during the preseason, but even if he did, there's a good chance I think you could at least get Mahalik to the practice squad to open the season, along with a guy like Ethan Cooper to at least open the season. Now, of course, all bets are off. You know, people always get worried. You know, this time of year, saying this guy will never pass through waivers kind of talk. And inevitably, they do pass through waivers and make it, especially rookies and really some first, second-year guys as well, too. So I like the chances of the Steelers keeping eight offensive linemen as we sit here right now. I think those eight are easy to outline, Hubbard being – you know, Finney, Hubbard being the backups along with Gerald Hawkins, really. And to be quite honest with you, that could be the best eight in the league right now, right?
Yeah, it's really strong. I mean, I'd have to look at some of the depth that maybe a Dallas has. So they've been hit a little bit with the starters, which has hurt their depth. But it's a really good group top to bottom, no question about it.
All right, tight ends real quick here. I mean, we know Jesse James is one of them. We think David Johnson's going to be one of them as well, too. I mean, he signed a two-year deal. It doesn't make him uncuttable, but the things that David Johnson brings you with position versatility at tight end and fullback, we think he's going to make it. Xavier Grimble, I mean, is there any reason to think that he won't make it? We don't think there's going to be, you know, I guess you can go ahead and throw in Roosevelt Nix in his position group for all practical purposes here. Those four to four barring injury, right? I mean, to me, Fazan Odom, a great guy to get excited about. Even the kid out of Pitt, I think is a great guy to be excited about. But is there any reason to believe any of those two undrafted free agents make the final 53? And is there any reason to think that as we sit here right now, that guys like Jesse James, David Johnson, Xavier Grimble, and Roosevelt Nix are not your four guys?
I think that they're clearly the big favorites. You know, Orndorff and Odom, I think they each have particular traits that are interesting. I think, you know, Orndorff has good size, experience playing, and a three-point stance. And while not a great blocker, I think better than most tight ends coming out. I think Odom, of course, is maybe the flashy, athletic, vertical, you know, threat. But I think we have to realize how raw of a run blocker Odom is and how bad he's going to look even just on the sleds and much less, you know, in actual practice and in scrimmages. So I think that one of those is going to make the practice squad. As long as Grimble shows some modicum of consistency, then he's going to make it. And assuming the conditioning is good, which watching him work out and knowing he went through the team last year, his conditioning should be night and day compared to the first day camp last year where he couldn't finish practice. You know, he's got to show some big plays, though. He's got to show that he is an athlete and can make an impact that, you know, maybe Jesse James can't do in order for Grimble to get on the field.
Yeah, and I wrote about him. That'll go up today on, you know, as part of our camp countdown series on Steelers Depot today. I wrote about Grimble. Consistency across the board needs to improve with him. You know, hands across the middle weren't great last year. Blocking, balance, base, especially talking about an end of the line type of guy here. The guy has to become, we don't expect him to become Heath Miller here, a young Heath Miller, but we expect a little bit better, really a lot better than what we saw out of him, in my opinion, last year. And, you know, like to see him become a little bit more refined route runner. He can run the seam. I don't worry about him out, you know, when it comes to that. As far as those out routes, though, I think a little bit of wasted movement in there will allow safeties and linebackers to potentially recover against him. But there is enough improvement area, I think, with him to warrant thinking and expecting we'll see that he'll be part of this roster. Did I miss anything with him?
No, I think that was well said.
Okay, defensive side of football. Alex, if you were to ask me, if people were to ask me, and I think one of our listeners did, the two positions that I like breaking down the most when it comes to football in general, what two would you guess that would be?
Oh, man, this is I feel like we're going to get this wrong. It's going to be a rift in our friendship. I'll say outside linebacker and safety.
No, well, you got one of them. I love breaking down edge rushers, but
yeah, I knew that one. That's an easy one.
Come on, what do I go? What do I gravitate right to when draft prospects every year?
Oh man, you did a lot of tight ends this year.
Tight ends. I thought
you were talking just defensive side only.
Oh no, no. Tight ends and edge rushers, man. I love those two things.
What is it about tight ends? I'm just curious.
Just the whole traditional versus the the new flex and all like that. I love me some traditional tight ends. I love me the guy. I love me the Jack Doyles of the world. The you know the kid out of Iowa this year. You know,
which I think you're very right about. By the way, George Kittle's killing it in 49ers.
Yeah, we'll see. Killing it during camp is one thing. During the regular season, I've always loved the traditional tight ends. And, you know, I'm starting to love a little bit more, obviously, the new flex tight ends as well, too. But, you know, love edge rushers as well, too. Very excited about T.J. Watt this year. Let's go over this position group top to bottom real quick. You know, it obviously starts with Bud Dupree, a guy that we think can at least maybe get to eight sacks in 2017. If he hits double digits, you and I, one of us, you would have to, we'll have to record doing some sort of a backflip or something. But I think the potential's there to go eight to double digit sacks with him in 2017. Moving through the list, you know, as long as James Harrison can remain healthy, I think he's going to give you 50%, 60% of the snaps this year. Still good against the run, knows where to be. Still can give you that rip move off the edge, that bull rush off the edge. T.J. Watt, you know, we broke him down a lot during the offseason since he was drafted. I think a lot. I think there's a chance he plays the other 40, 50, 60% of the snaps. If he can give you 7, 8, 9 sacks during a rookie season, once again, another player to do a backflip over. Interested to see how he holds up against the run during the rookie season. On the other side, I think Anthony Ciccolo became the odds-on favorite to be the backup to Bud Dupree this year. Interested to see him take another step forward. I don't think he's ever going to be the elite pass rusher. I think he showed some nice things against the run. So that's how many have I named there? That's four. Now the question is, who's number five? To me, Arthur Motes, I've said it time and time again, he's just a guy, and it's not going to take Keon Adams or anybody else much to make up room on him, in my opinion, and especially when it comes to special teams. Have I missed anything there?
No, I think you covered it well. I mean, we've talked about this position so much in the offseason that we don't have to spend, you know, the world on it because we know how important this position is. We know how much it has to step up this year, and it will go as Bud Dupree goes. He's the guy and really the only guy that you can point to and say he has a good chance to hit double-digit sacks. And frankly, Dave, he has to this year. The Steelers have to get back to that, get back to their core principles of being able to get home with a four-man rush so they can play, you know, more traditional coverage, and they can drop seven. And if you can rush with four and get there and drop seven, then your defense has a really good chance to succeed. So he's got to have a big year. We know all about that. The one guy that, aside from him, that I'm excited about to watch is Anthony Ciccolo. Now that he's healthy, he got dogged by an ankle injury last year. He's shown some good things on tape, and he's obviously been a core special teamer, as we talked about two or three weeks ago, but he always looks good in camp, and I'm excited to see him continue to take these steps forward. It's funny, he posted a throwback Thursday picture on Instagram yesterday of him in Miami just being like a fat defensive end. In the way he looked then and the way he looks now, it's pretty remarkable the transformation he made and how quickly he did it and how relatively seamlessly that he accomplished it. So kudos to him. I'm excited to watch him work.
He's never going to be an elite. He's never going to have the bend that James Harrison has now, is he?
No, never. And playing time's going to be tough. You know, being on the left side, Dupree's going to, I think, dominate the snaps. It's not going to be a rotation there. But I think the opportunity in camp Ciccolo will have with Harrison sitting out, you know, practice and just having those chances will be interesting. And I'll give Ciccolo this credit, you know, and I think you noted this in the camp countdown that you did of him. When he gets to the quarterback, he finishes plays. He forces fumbles. I think he had, what, two or three this year, and he had, like, what, 3.5 sacks? So, I mean, the guy knows how to finish a play.
What one thing does he control that he can – that you expect improvement on from last season?
you know, he's probably someone I want to go back and look at in my one step to take right before the season opens up. I don't know if it's that second move that he can develop. I mean, I think a good pass rusher can win in with just two moves. You think about, you know, the Dwight Freeneys of the world. They didn't have six moves, but you have your go-to and then a counter off of that. And, you know, I think Chicklo is now getting to the stage where he's got a couple years under his belt where now we're getting to the counter, you know, part of it where you have maybe your first move and let's start working off some work off of it.
Arthur Moat's going to make it?
I don't know. We'll see. You know, we got to find out about Keon Adams. We know that Adams has a chance. He's a better athlete. He's cheaper. He's younger. You know, Moat's, as we've talked about, is not a great special teamer. He's kind of just in there if you have to. Like I said from the start, flip a coin. It could go either way. We'll see what happens.
And look, you're going to be talking about Keon Adams quite a bit over the course of the next several weeks here. Hopefully, we're going to be getting excited here, and people are going to, you know, this, that, and the other. The biggest thing to watch with him the next several weeks is how he plays on special teams. Mm-hmm. Because if you get down to the point during the 2017 season where Keon Adams is on the field rushing the quarterback, something's gone horribly wrong.
Oh, don't even mention that. That gives me a shiver down my spine.
I mean, we definitely want to be talking something positive about him as a pass rusher. But more than anything else, I hope we're talking about, I want us to have a conversation about, after this first two preseason games, is, man, Keon Adams can really get down the field and get in on some of these tackles here. You know, that's one of the things I hope we're talking about. I think the rest is a given as a pass rusher. Any other pass rushers on this team? There's nobody else down the depth chart really past Keon Adams, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the UDFA, or the future contract, I should say, Farrington. I can't pronounce his last name right now, from Kentucky. You know, I don't know much about him, but, you know, of guys that are going to make the 53, or at least have a strong chance to, we've covered them, and we know the importance of how the guys at the top, the Watts and the Duprees, have to play for this defense to go where it wants to go.
All right, I set up the outside linebacker position and all like that, and then got you to comment on it and all like that. To spare the listeners me stuttering and stammering and recapping a whole group, I'm going to turn the cornerbacks group over to you now. So you set them all up to me the way I set up the outside linebackers to you.
Well, my stuttering today has been probably just as bad. I get so tongue-tied sometimes. It's you'd think I'd be better at this by now. But, you know, the cornerback position, I think it's similar to outside linebacker, Dave, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, where those guys that have to make the jump, whether that's, you know, whatever happens in the slot. I assume it's going to be William Gay, but he's got to be able to hold his ground. Artie Burns, of course, is the big name that comes to mind, and then Ross Cockrell, I think, is in the prime of his career. So let me just ask you generally, and this may be too vague of a question, but how much confidence do you have in the assumed three starters of Burns, Cockrell, and William Gay?
It goes hand to hand with pass rush, man. I hate to take the easy way out like that. But you know, the secondary we've seen in the past. This Steelers organization has won some Super Bowls with some very marginal type secondaries. Now, a lot of that in the past was old Dick LeBeau tackle to catch, don't give up plays, let the pass rush get home. I think pass rush still, I mean, obviously remains a big part of it now, but I just don't think, because the way these quarterbacks are trained now to get rid of the football in under 2.6 seconds, it really puts a lot more onus on the secondary. So, with that said, all these years I've been talking about, boy, just give me an increased pass rush and it'll make the secondary look better. I think the secondary does need to hold up their end of the bargain a little bit more maybe than they have had in the past. I'm not saying that any one of these guys are going to make make the Pro Bowl, and I think there is reasons to be worried there. But I think with the sheer fact that you have guys that are a little bit more used now, especially in Artie Burns and eventually guys like Cameron Sutton, to hold up a little bit longer in man coverage, I think it gives you a little more of a fighting chance. I think William Gay, backside of the career and all, can still give you some quality snaps in the slot. They obviously went out and got Sensabaugh. There's a growing anticipation, I think, they're right now before the start of camp, that Sensabaugh is going to win the starting slot job. I'm not sure how much I buy that. But recap your question to me one more time again. What's my confidence level in there?
Yeah, not even focused on the pass rush, because we know that's intertwined, but just in a vacuum, the players themselves, do you think that they're going to have a successful season?
I think better than average. I mean, I don't think we're going to be talking about this as being the biggest thing here is don't give up big plays. We expect this unit to play more man, more man zone, right? I mean, there's no two ways about it. With that said, we're still going to see some traditional cover three in here as well too. The biggest thing, and didn't Robert Golden say this as well too? You know, we're going to invite teams to go deep on us more over the top. As long as you're not getting beat deep over the top, as long as you're being able to tackle the catch in other situations there, I think they're going to be fine. I do expect this to be a better all-around coverage unit than the first 8 or 9 games of the 2016 season. So I expect some improvement, but I think when the dust clears, I think if we're talking about a top 12, top 10 secondary, I would be fine with that.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be more varied, team schematically. I think it's going to be a more comfortable group. I think there'll be a better group for it. Cam Sutton, Dave, it's obviously going to be tough to see him get any sort of starting job. But what do you see? How do you think he's going to perform in camp, pretty well? And how do you see him fitting and contributing to this team? I assume him on special teams.
Yeah, I see it on special teams. I would have liked to hear, at least heard about him getting more slot snaps during the off-season program there. But look, we saw last year that they had to, because of injuries, they had to throw a couple of guys in the slot. As smart as he is, it's going to take some take some of him acclimating to the defense and the language, right, and where he is, where he and other people are supposed to be on the field. And I think that's the biggest thing there sometimes, is not only knowing where you're supposed to be on the field, it's knowing where other people are supposed to be on the field as well too. Artie Burns last year.
Yeah, that was a big problem for him. Absolutely. Sengquay Golson make this team?
I'm rooting for it.
I didn't ask if you're rooting for it.
I think he's missed too much time.
Yeah.
I hope he does, but I mean, the man hasn't played one snap so far, and he's got a lot. I think they're going to give him a lot of. Look, you better find out for sure what you're tossing on the trash heap this year. Mm-hmm. So sure. I think he's going to get a lot of looks. There's no reason for me to think he's going to right now.
Right, I think he's outside looking in. It's not impossible. We don't know enough about it to make an educated, really, guess either way. But
if he does, whose expense does it come at? Gaze, right?
Or Brian Allen's. If he struggles, as a raw guy that goes out on the practice squad, we've seen fifth round cornerbacks get moved before, the Terry Hawthorns and Shaq Richardson's of the world. That's my best guess, is Brian Allen.
We're thinking they're keeping 6, though, right, in total?
Yeah. The only thing that could get weird is if they really want to keep 5 safeties, but I think even then they would go 6 and 5 and just go really heavy in the secondary. But, it's an open competition. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
All right. Well, their 6 is, Burns, obviously, Cockrell, Gay, I mean, I've got gay written in pen.
Yeah, and so you got Sensabaugh.
Sensabaugh is pretty Sutton. Much in pen. Sutton. I mean, that's
five.
Five. I mean, who's your six? I mean,
it's Allen or Golson.
Right. So. I guess there's a shot Golson can make it because I mean sure. let's face it, I mean Allen's long right mm-hmm. now. That's the best way to describe Brian Allen right now. A long athletic cornerback. Because really, I mean, that's all he is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's a big lump of clay that has to get molded up. But I think, you know, with the traits that he has, I think he'll be a good special teamer. He's a much better tackler than people already give him credit for. He got a bad rap, which I think was unfair to him. And that, you know, big, long corner that, you know, team's starting to look for in the Artie Burns mold, I think is going to compel them to keep Allen. So we'll see with Golson, though. Not ruling it out, but he's on the outside looking in. Last question for you, Dave, on cornerbacks. Any of these future guys, small school names, have any sort of chance? Mike Hilton's gotten a lot of, you know, publicity in OTAs, had a good spring workout. You got Brandon Dixon, Greg Ducrey, anyone there catch your attention?
You know, you've written about quite a few of these guys, and I think who was it recently that was quoted asking Kevin Colbert about Mike Hilton?
Foster.
Yeah, Foster. Ramon Foster. I don't know. Is it safe to say that there's one every year that you know just sticks his you know a neck out there a lot more than what maybe what we initially thought? I've seen your breakdown on Hilton. I'm interested to hear your thoughts about him as camp progresses and all like that. I like Ethan Cooper, but I think he's destined for the practice squad. I like the tight end out of Pitt, Orndorff. I really like his chances more than I do Fazon Odom. I think Odom has just been extremely overrated so far this offseason. So I like Orndorff over Odom of those two. Galambos, great story. I mean, should we be talking about Kelsey more?
Maybe. The Steelers did pay Kelsey a pretty hefty signing bonus, I think, which means they like him. So, you know, we'll see. But I wasn't totally blown away by Kelsey on tape.
Yeah, I mean, maybe as a special teams guy, he can show you something there. So, I think that's it. You know, there's nobody that I'm jumping up and down on the table for right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I hear you. I can't talk today. It's too early. One last quick segue. Speaking of Mike Hilton, we did do an interview with him. That'll be up on Steelers Depot, I believe, Monday morning. It was a good interview. Asked him about Foster talking to Colbert. He got a good chuckle out of that. So, yeah, you're right. There's a camp sleeper every year that doesn't always work out. We've seen the Kevin Foggs and even B.W. Webbs and Alden Darbys of the world that come and go. But you know, I think Hilton's going to be competitive and make that room better.
These guys are going to have some peaks and valleys here over the course of the next few weeks where we're hyping them up, and then the game's going to come. We're going to say, I don't know about that. All right, let's get to some questions to close things out real quick, Alex. From Beaver Falls Hosiery, what were the salary cap implications if Steelers had offered Bell $15 million a year instead of 12? Any roster disruption? Look, they could have made that first year salary cap hit work. I mean, even if you gave the guy a $15 million signing bonus on a five-year deal, that would have been a $3 million amortization charge. You could have gave him, even high as $4 million. You could have put it to you this way. This is what I was hoping the Steelers were going to do all along, even though it was just me hoping it, was to work out a deal where his already scheduled cap number $12.12 million via the tag barely moved, you know. So in mm-hmm. other words, trying to pay him out a lot of that money in the first 2 years. So you can make anything work. And this, of course, is David asking this question. It wasn't the sticking point. I think the guaranteed money over the first year, 2 years of the deal was obviously the sticking point.
I agree.
Christian Perry, how strong weak is the safety group right now? How can they improve them this year?
I think it's going to be a natural progression, you know, Sean Davis being healthy and comfortable with where he's at, knowing where he's going to line up for starters is big. I think Jordan Dangerfield being a lot more comfortable, getting some time on defense is going to be nice for him. And I thought Damian Stafford was a really strong kind of, you know, June signing to have to give some extra depth to a safety position that really needed it. So I think it's just natural progression of getting reps and comfort. And, you know, as the whole group gets older, the corners too, and they have more experience, there's better communication. Mike Mitchell has talked about not having to babysit the other guys more, let Mitchell focus on his keys and his game. So I think it's just a natural progression that'll make this group better.
From Xavier Goulden, also talking about safeties, do you think Sean Davis has potential to be one of the best players on the Steelers defense and one of the top safeties in the league? I like Sean Davis. I think he has the ability and the capability of improving his game even more, becoming a 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 year safety in the league with the Steelers. However, his ceiling, I think he's close to. I think he needs to, A, become a better tackler, get a little bit better recognition in the back end of that defense. I don't think we're going to be talking about Sean Davis as one of the greatest safeties in Steeler Nation or in Steeler history that we've talked about. And as far as top safeties in the league go, yeah, I'm not, you know, maybe his top 10. Potential, yeah, maybe. You know, I don't think he's a guy that's going to intercept, even though he's got, you know, the physical attributes and able to get around the field. You know, not a 4, 5, 6 interception a year guy in my eyes. But I think he can be a good safety. I'm not convinced he can be a great safety.
Yeah, I there's potential there. I think it's got a decently high ceiling, but I'm not going to even entertain the idea of him being one of the best players, best safety. He's got so far to go, and he's got to show improvement this year. One, being consistent, being a good tackler. Two, making splash plays, getting some impact plays. It's a strong safety position demands, and they haven't had since, you know, Troy's been gone. That's not impossible, but that's so far off. I don't even want to entertain the idea.
You know, definitely a better version of a Will Allen, I think, along those lines. Who's another one over the years that, you know, Ryan Clark, I obviously played more in the back end, but he was interchangeable as well, too. Look, Ryan Clark has already been forgotten about, but he had a solid career. I mean, if you got a similar type career out of Sean Davis, you know, and then when his career is over 2 years later, you forget his name, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Clark had a really good career. He just got overshadowed by Troy, but he was the perfect foil to Troy. I mean, that was such a great relationship those two had.
He missed tackles.
Yeah, but he knocked some guys out, too. So he was a lot of fun to watch.
Right. Still Nation Mex, getting on that Bell questioning bandwagon. Does he even have a chance to be the second or third best wide receiver for the Steelers this upcoming this season? So I guess we're taking it that on that Bell questioning. I don't know if he's questioning Bell wagon or just another question about Bell. Bell caught the amount of passes that he did last year because the Steelers didn't have the receiving options that he had. I would not be surprised even if Bell plays more games than he did last season, that Bell might only catch 60, 65 passes.
You think, even if he plays all 16 games?
I think there's a possibility. I mean, at best, maybe equal last year's numbers, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't think he's going to catch 100 passes.
No, I didn't say that. I think he'll be around the 80 reception mark. Martavis Bryant's going to take some away, but, if, you know, I mean, Bell caught, what, 73, 75 in 12 games last year? And, you know, I think he's now Ben security blanket without Heath Miller. And James might continue to be that guy, you know, improving that, but Bell's the security blanket. And he's going to catch those third downs, those check downs, and that's going to add up.
I'm going to take under last year's receiving numbers.
I'm going to take over. I can't believe you're taking the under. I'm surprised by that.
I just think, you know, with you know, trying to spread, you know, spreading the ball around a little bit more and all like that. And don't forget, you know, we all hope Juju's going to to work his way in there and be another security blanket as well. Too, hopefully they don't have to use him that much. I'd like to see him get about 320 total touches during the season. It might be a little bit more than that, but that's what I'm hoping for. Let's see. Ted Webb. Steelers easily led the NFL going for two last season. I like the aggressive style, but sometimes I feel Tomlin went for two too often.
Is he asking me if Tomlin went for two too often?
Yeah.
He's one of the more aggressive coaches in that regard, and it is a little unsettling to see anytime that you see, you know, coaches kind of go against the grain, and we know, of course, the negative, you know, downside if you don't convert, but I appreciate it. I get it. You know, you practice seven shots to start every day at training camp and days in practice during the season. You're all about the red zone play. And you have, you know, one of the best offenses in the league. So I like the aggressiveness there.
I don't mind it. I like aggressiveness, but it sure was frustrating to watch that Cowboys game the other night. Watch them.
I can't believe you were watching it.
I watch them all, man. I don't get caught up so much in the wins and losses, as I used to as a younger fan, you know, so I can, mm-hmm. I can watch any game, multiple times. And it was a little bit rough watching them chase the two in that game there. But, you know, look, I'm fine. I'm fine with the aggressiveness, and especially at the personnel and the history going in your favor there. Austin Hackett, who is the guy you're most looking forward to seeing with the pads on? I can't wait to hear about James Conner meeting Vince Williams in a hole.
That's a pretty good one. That'll be a welcome to the NFL movement if Vince Williams has anything to say about it. I don't know, man. It's so tough, Austin, to try to come up with one name to discuss. I mean, I love looking at all these guys and seeing how they improve. I mean, I mentioned Sean Davis, Artie Burns, how big of a year it is for them. I want to see Bud Dupree, you know, translate all the work he's put in the offseason with Chuck Smith over to, the with pads on in the football field. So it's hard for me to come down with one name. I mean, I'll say Dupree because he's, I think, the linchpin for this defense's success.
Wow. I can't wait to see Juju. I really can't. Mm-hmm. T.J. Watt and yada yada. I watched so much Juju after he was drafted that I wanted to hang up a poster in the room. I mean, I'm that big of a fan of his after not really knowing a lot about him prior to the draft. So I'm gonna put Juju Smith-Schuster on the list there. One other quick question here. Chuck Diesel says, potential 2018 Steelers draft needs that you project right now to watch for during the upcoming college season. Look, apologies to James Conner and all like that. I think you got to keep your eye on a running back here. Not a round one guy, but maybe another second, third round guy that can do it all. I think you got to watch that inside linebacker.
Dave. Breaking my heart.
I think you got to kind of keep an eye on that. And I think you got to be on the lookout for maybe another safety as well.
Yeah, all good suggestions. It's similar to what the Steelers need at cut downs in the draft are kind of going to be intertwined. I will say this. I haven't really gotten, of course, in the 2018 draft stuff, but I know the 2018 running back class is going to be as good, if not better, than this past year's, which was pretty good, by the way. So, if there's a time to need running backs, these last years have been, or this past year and this upcoming year, are good times for it.
I believe with what Joel Corey said on the back end of him talking about the way he treats running backs or would treat running backs in the NFL, and especially when it comes to the draft. I would not spend a first-round draft pick. Look, Christian McCaffrey, love that kid. I mean, there's a lot of great first-round running backs. But on the same notion, I think you can get the Le'Veon Bells and when was David Johnson drafted? What round was that?
Third, fourth.
Right. Those guys, I think, are out there and can be had probably almost every year or every other year there. So I would kind of keep an eye on that. And we'll see what happens with the edge rushers this year as well, too. I don't think you're going to draft an edge rusher first round next year. But, you know, first two or three rounds, I mean, James Harris is not going to be there next year, I don't think. Arthur Motes is most definitely not going to be there. Is Keon Adams going to pan out? Is Anthony Chiclo going to pan out? I think you got to think seriously about that as well, too. We'll run a little bit long here and ask one more here. Someone asked this morning something about Lone Lions being as how the Steelers leaked the information. Is that going to affect future negotiations?
No, I don't think it will. It's not what Washington did, where they came out with a public statement. And you can't even guarantee that this was some sort of nefarious, coordinated, attack by the Steelers to put this information out there. Is it just one guy who's buddy-buddy with, reporter that gives that information out? I think they understand some business, and this is how this stuff goes. And I think it's going to be forgotten by the time you get back to the table.
Yeah, money's still green, I guess, from whichever side that you can get it from. So, I don't think it'll make a difference in the way things go down the line. I was a bit surprised, though, that the numbers surfaced as quick as they did. All right, quick program announcement here. There will be no show on Monday, no Terrible Podcast. As many of you already know by now, my father passed away this past week. So I am actually leaving for Florida later on tonight for a Monday funeral back in Florida. I will not be back in my chair until I don't think late Wednesday of next week or Thursday. Another program announcement. I think David Todd will be back with me next Friday, so we'll welcome him back with open arms. If that's the case, Alex will obviously be out at training camp a week from today, so we're going to be resuming those nightly check-ins with Alex Cazora. Look for his write-ups, of course, daily on Steelers Depot, following the practices. And, we might miss a practice podcast recap along the way due to him maybe getting in late here and there, but I would look for those special podcast segments to resume as well, too. So a lot to get excited about, but no podcast on Monday. Who knows? Maybe Alex and I will get together, maybe Wednesday or Thursday for a pre-podcast. We'll have to play that by ear. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex Cazora at Alex Cazora, at Alex_Cazora. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com, find that donate button. Upper right navigational bar, I think Alex will probably put up a training camp donation drive fund post here probably over the weekend. So look for that as well, too. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.